as much more efficient ways to save lives than just waiting for the bell to go off and respond to a fire. And that's through being proactive. Best way to do that is through prevention, because after all, it's not just the citizens' lives that are at risk. That's when firefighters lose their lives.
You're listening to CRR Radio from the Vision 2020 Project. Hi, my name is Ed Kamau from the Vision 2020 Project. On this episode of CRR Radio, we're talking about using data to fine-tune the New Orleans smoke alarm installation program. So let's get into it.
I'm Chief Tim McConnell. I'm the superintendent of the New Orleans Fire Department.
My name is Oliver Wise. I'm director of the city's Office of Performance and Accountability.
And the reason we're talking with Director Wise and Chief McConnell is New Orleans recently did a data-driven smoke alarm installation program that we really want to hear a lot of more details about. Chief, I guess I'd like to start with you. What was the genesis of this project? What brought it about even in the first place?
For the fire service across the country, and particularly here in New Orleans, you know, we've recognized that there's much more efficient ways to save lives than just waiting for the bell to go off and respond to a fire. And that's through being proactive. And so we've been putting in smoke alarms for years, but it just wasn't effectively reaching the community. You know, we put in maybe about 800 to 1,000 smoke alarms a year through just doing advertising and trying to get people to do it. And so we were looking for a better way to go about doing it to reach the community more effectively. And tragically, we had a fire on November 11th in 2014 where we had five residents die, including three beautiful children in the Broadmoor section of town. And so we really decided, you know, although we had been crafting this program, that it really, really needed to move forward in a much more aggressive way. And so we started going about trying to find a way to do that and developing a program. And Mr. Wise's office reached out to us and said, look, you know, we're not first responders, we don't respond to fires, but we think we can help. We think we can help you target the areas where people are highest at risk, people who are, you know, least likely to have a smoke alarm and most likely to suffer a structure fire with fatalities. And so his team, you know, approached us and started bringing us some stuff. And it was a little bit strange to us, you know, we're like, wait, what? You know, and so he came on board, and it really was a great success. And the impetus was, once again, people dying in fires.
So, Director Wise, how did you go about doing this? You know, it was a data-driven approach. How did you do it?
So what we used, you know, it took us a little while to line up at this methodology, but we used commonly available federal data from the Census Bureau to figure out those blocks of the city that were least likely to have smoke alarms. And the way we did that is there's a question asked in the American Housing Survey, which is available for every county around the country. In Louisiana, we call them parishes, but every county around the country. And they ask that question, do you have a smoke alarm or not? But that data is only available at the county level. So in order to extrapolate that insight to a more discrete level, we found that there are other variables, namely the age of the structure, residents' income as a proportion of poverty, and how long they've been there. Those variables, if you put them all together, are closely associated with whether someone has a smoke alarm or not. That, you know, we build a predictive model based on those other variables. And those other variables, so poverty, age of structure, and tenure, are also available in the American Community Survey, which has data available for a much more discrete geography. So putting that together, we were able to come up with a fairly accurate map of those areas of the city where you're going to have least likely to have a smoke alarm. So that was kind of part one. Part two then was figuring out where are the areas of the city that are most at risk of fire deaths. And there was some research done by NFPA several years ago that showed that the very young, those, you know, younger than 5 years old, and the elderly, older than 65, are most likely to die if there's a fire in their house. So we were able to use our own administrative data on where fire calls were coming from, you know, our own 911 data, and then use census data to figure out where in the city we have concentrations of the very young and the very old. And so we kind of merged all that data together to come up with this overall map that we were able to go to to give to the fire department so they can figure out those places to go first.
So, Chief, how did you logistically manage all this? You have all this great data that Director Wise's department gave you. How did you implement that in the field?
So we took the data that he gave us and we started targeting those areas first. We literally made massive spreadsheets with the addresses that he wound up coming up with at the after analyzing the data, and literally we go door to door to every one of those residences in those neighborhoods, with the goal being to ensure that every resident, you know, every citizen, has a working smoke alarm in their home. It's a labor intensive task, but every fire unit goes out regularly, either every day or target it particularly on weekends because we know people are more likely to be at home, and literally go door to door and check off each one of those addresses to document. Do they have one? Even if they said they did, we ask if we can come in and verify it. We'll check it. We'll change batteries if we need to. And, you know, a lot of smoke alarms now by electrical code are hardwired. But we go in and we have a program and we provide, not only install them, you know, check them for you, but if you need them, we'll install them. And we only install 10-year smoke alarms now because of the maintenance issue of, you know, changing batteries. And we literally go door to door and targeted initially those addresses that Oliver's team came up with. And, you know, eventually we're hitting every single residence in the city of New Orleans.
How many have you installed since you started the program?
We're up around 18,000 at this point. We've covered over 90,000 residences, actually. You know, so whether, no matter what happens when we hit that address, we document whether they had them or not. So, the idea being that, once again, creating more data for all of us folks, that if something does happen, you know, unfortunately, if there's a fire somewhere, we know whether we were effective or not. And I'll give you a great example of that. So as we started this program, we started documenting it. And in February of 2015, we installed smoke alarms at a home. It was an old house that had been renovated into three different apartments. We installed smoke alarms, and about 6 months later, in September of that year, we had a fire in the middle of the night. And when we got there, the three different families, 11 folks, standing on the front lawn, one a six-month-old baby, and firefighters arrived, and they said, "Hey, everybody's out. You know, smoke alarms woke them up." So we know it works. We know smoke alarms save lives.
Oh, that's excellent. That's a great story. And I just noticed, I was just checking the news, that you recently had one where you had, I think, 7 kids in a home where there was a fire.
Yes.
After incidents like that, do you also canvass the neighborhood, you know, to install smoke alarms as well?
We do. So we try and capitalize. I hate to say it, you know, we caught a little bit of grief from some folks when we went after this family of 5 died in November. You know, folks was, you know, we were on the news saying, you know, this family died. They didn't have smoke alarms. If they had had it, they might have made it out. And caught a little grief because people were saying, you know, geez, how can you, you know, this tragic loss. And my take is, how can you not? You know, you'd be letting these folks die in vain if you didn't go out and try to assure that you saved other people's lives. And so we do capitalize every chance we get. So when there's been a fire in a neighborhood, usually everybody in the neighborhood knows about it. So the units will go out either immediately, you know, depending on what time of day it happens, and canvas in the blocks right around where that fire was. And if not, they'll go the next day and go out and canvas that neighborhood. And it really, it's very effective because people go, you know, they remember either the night of the fire, or you tell them, you know, your neighbor just had a fire and they didn't have an alarm and we'd like to make sure you have one. And so, whereas sometimes people are hesitant to say, yeah, y'all can come in and check my house and put in a smoke alarm, when they see that immediate impact, it's pretty effective. And so we do exactly what you said as part of our program. We do it systematically by the addresses that we have on the spreadsheets. When there's a fire in a neighborhood, we go into those neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm. Now, Director Wise, have you done an analysis to see how it, you know, how effective the approach has been doing it just randomly versus doing the data-driven approach?
We entertain the idea of doing something like a random control trial to test the efficacy of our model. But at the end of the day, you know, this project was really about making sure that we were using our firefighter time efficiently. And the time it would take to go out to a control group versus a treatment group just wasn't worth the time and effort. We had enough anecdotal evidence from the firefighters going out to those initial neighborhoods that we were hitting the right ones. And, you know, there were volunteers involved in that effort, too. The mayor on, this was in August 2015, which happened to be the 10th anniversary of Katrina, sponsored a big community service day, and there were thousands of volunteers who helped. And this was one of the opportunities to volunteer was with the fire department and the Red Cross to install smoke alarms in these neighborhoods that we had highlighted as high need. And I went out that day too with the fire department, and you can really tell. I mean, you go in these neighborhoods, and I think the residents were very pleased that they were getting this type of outreach, and people needed them. You know, people really needed this was just the impetus they needed in order to change out that old smoke alarm or have a new one installed where previously there had been none.
Chief, you know, we know the life of smoke alarms 10 years, and in 2015 was 10 years after Katrina. Did you see a large number of smoke alarms that needed to be swapped out just based on age?
So we did actually do a campaign, and we did it actually in conjunction with the U.S. Fire Administration and here in the state of Louisiana, our state fire marshal, where we're trying to educate people that you do need to look at the age of your smoke alarms, because the manufacturer's recommendations are after 10 years, change them. And so we have been targeting that. We are checking them. Part of the electrical code, as I said before, is that you have to have working smoke alarms and they have to be interconnected. And we had one nice advantage we had, you know, from every tragedy comes something good. You know, back that 75-80% of our housing inventory was destroyed here, all those houses were brought up to code. And
right.
So you had these put in, but then you hit that 10-year mark and people don't think that they got to change their smoke alarm. So we have made part of our campaign to check the date.
Are you running into an incremental cost in doing this type of program? I mean, I assume you're using on-duty firefighters to go out there and do this effort.
So from the labor perspective, it really is very cost efficient. Firefighters are working a 24-hour shift, and you know they're on that shift. So anytime a fire breaks out, someone can respond. During the other time when they're not actually responding to an incident, they are training. You know, they say you train the most for the thing you do the least, right? And so we're training for our emergency response. But we also do, as I said, many proactive things. I quite often educate people. You read our mission statement, which has been the same one for nearly 25 years, doesn't actually say anything about fighting fires. You know, it talks about reducing the incidence of loss of life and property due to fires. And the best way to do that is through prevention, because after all, it's not just the citizens' lives that are at risk. That's when firefighters lose their lives. And so we take that time when we're waiting for an incident to go out and do this canvassing. We also do commercial inspections at commercial businesses to make sure that they're safe and less chance of having a fire or people getting harmed. And that's the efficiency. So the only real cost is funding the cost of these smoke alarms. And as I said, that's trivial when you think about the loss of a life. So we get that funded. We have some great partners with the State Fire Marshal and with the American Red Cross that have been helping us provide these smoke alarms. We've written some grants to get them provided. If people could only realize the value of having a working smoke alarm in the homes and the odds of having a fatality are so minimal. I have nearly 34 years on this department, and I have never had a fatality in a home where I had a working smoke alarm. That's a pretty stunning statistic. And that, once again, that's also where the people were capable. You know, we have had an instance where someone, you know, couldn't save themselves, even though this working smoke alarm was there. But it's a stunning statistic. If they have an alarm, when it goes off, people get out the house. And so when you talk about the investment, even if 100% of those smoke alarms had to be bought with my budget, you know, through tax dollars, it's worth it. It's truly worth it to ensure that people get out the house and they're okay.
Now, Director Wise, you had mentioned that you use several databases in compiling this kind of information. And these are databases that are just easily available. Now, you're obviously a large city, and you've got tools and resources and people with expertise. Is it possible for other communities to be able to do what you did, or did you need to bring in specialized expertise to pull this off?
Yeah, so we were lucky enough to work with a startup out of New York called Enigma. Mike Flowers is the chief analytics officer with them, and he was Mayor Bloomberg's analytics lead when Michael Bloomberg was the mayor of New York City. And they provided pro bono support on methodology review, on kind of strategic guidance. But we did the analysis in-house. And to be honest, I mean, you described us as a big city, and I guess we're bigger than many. But, you know, we have less than 400,000 people in our city. We're a city of very, very modest resources. And, you know, I think data analytics in the popular media is portrayed as something beyond the reach of it's something futuristic and only for the big mega cities like Singapore and New York City and places like that. But I think that couldn't be farther from the truth. And to be honest, what we used traditional data sources that were just underutilized. We used federal data that is easily downloaded from the Census Bureau's website that anyone has access to. And we used our own 911 data of the locations of fires to figure out where we have concentrations of fires, which is, I think, data that, you know, nearly every fire department has access to. And we used open source software, R, to do the analysis. So there was no marginal investment in technology to perform this task. We had, you know, one analyst making a public sector salary to do the analysis. And he was very skilled, very talented guy. But we were using statistical methodologies that are commonly taught in college courses in statistics. I mean, we're using multivariate regression and data sources that are freely available. So I think what made this, I think one of the, it's a very scalable program. And indeed, Syracuse has instituted a similar program. There's a nonprofit called DataKind, a data science nonprofit that helps governments around the country and nonprofits use data for public good. And they're working with Chicago on an instance of a similar program there. And to be honest, the data is all there, and it's not beyond the reach. You do not need an MIT PhD to do this type of math. It's not beyond the reach of smart people in your city to figure this out. And I mean, really, the hard part of this is having a strong leader like Chief McConnell, who can change the strategy of the fire department, of one from that's response driven and complaint driven to one that's focused on prevention. I think that's the hard part.
Chief, have you seen a change in runs or activities since you've done the smoke alarm install program?
Yeah, thanks, Oliver, for the compliment. But it really is, it's, you know, firefighters that lose their lives in these events too. People need to realize that. And so being someone, I'm very protective of the folks who work for me, and I'm worried about them. And every firefighter doesn't take long to learn that when you pull up in front of a house and people say, you know, everybody's out versus my baby's inside is huge, and the risk you want to take. And so it's, you know, their lives that are also being protected. But yes, we have seen good results. You know, our fires nationally have been going down as a trend anyway. But you see a difference in the severity of fires, the number of larger fires, because even though you're reducing the life risk, you're also reducing the severity of a fire because of early detection. So someone just, you know, discovers a fire early because the alarm went off. And I think it'll take a couple more years to really get some ability to really analyze what the effects are. But I'll give you this example, and probably everybody who has a worked smoke alarm can relate to it. You know, the difference of, you know, you leave something on the stove or you're burning something and the alarm goes off and you walk into the kitchen and you shut it off versus without the alarm, you would have probably discovered it when, you know, somebody was banging on your door or it was too late. You know, it's just, and we never get that call. It's my point. You know, we never get the phone call because the person gets up, they turn off the stove and they go back to bed versus, you know, a tragedy in the middle of the night or the person's jumping out of a window. And so I think we'll start to see some data that's worth analyzing in the near future. You got to combine that. I'll have to get Oliver to analyze it for us because, as I said, the trends nationally because of good code enforcement and because of these type of things, these type of programs, the fires have been trending down across the country as it is, but I think this will accelerate that. And if everyone, I would tell you, across the country, if legislators could get their head around this, you'd see legislation that would mandate, and there are countries that do this, mandate people coming in, and you know, you have to let them come in and check your alarms. There are countries that do that. The fire department knocks on your door, you have to let them in your home. To make sure you have a working smoke alarm, and the effect and efficiency of that is unbelievable.
Director Wise, do you have to update the data, or is it the, you know, you said you created kind of heat maps of where the high-risk areas are. Is that fairly static, or does that change over time?
You know, the use of the map was to figure out where to go first. Now that we're a couple of years in the program, and the fire department has gone beyond those high-risk areas and really has covered more of the other areas of the city. You know, to answer your question, no, we haven't done a refresh of the map yet. And just before on the earlier question on scalability or the earlier talking point on scalability of this, that organization that provided guidance on this project, Enigma, created an app on their website called Smoke Signals, which generalizes this intel nationwide because we used national data. You know, we use the Census Bureau data to figure out where those areas for risk of not having a smoke alarm. So they took that methodology that we developed here for the New Orleans context and generalized that nationally. So if you Google smoke signals or if you go to enigma.io, you can find that really helpful app on their website.
And I'll definitely have links to that in the show notes below. Plus, too, a really good video that was put out about this program that I came across while doing research for this that explained it really well, too. So I'm going to include that in the show notes as well for everybody. Well, we've been talking with Director Oliver Wise and Chief Timothy McConnell from New Orleans about the data-driven smoke alarm program they've done down there. And really appreciate both you gentlemen taking the time to talk with us today on CRR Radio.
Great. Thank you for your interest. Appreciate it.
Thanks for helping us spread the word. Appreciate it.
To learn more about community risk reduction and the Vision 2020 project, be sure to visit us at www.strategicfire.org. And thanks for listening.